Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners, so we speak a little slower, and we use words and phrases, especially written, for people learning English.
We also explain words and language rules, all while bringing you stories and information from around the world. Today on the program, you will hear stories from Mario Ritter and Marcia James. Later, June Sims and I will bring you this week's Personal Technology Report. But first, Ashley tells us the latest news related to the death of Kim Jong-nam.
Malaysia has charged two women with the killing of the half-brother of North Korea's leader at the Kuala Lumpur airport last month. Siti Aisyah, a 25-year-old Indonesian, and Duan Thi Hong, a 28-year-old woman from Vietnam, appeared at a court in Kuala Lumpur under heavy security. Court officials did not ask them to officially declare their innocence or guilt. Reuters News Service reported that the court in which the women appeared would likely not be the one to try the murder case. However, the women have said they did not knowingly attack the person identified as North Korean Kim Jong-nam. They said they believed they were taking part in a joke for a television program. When the charges were read, Duan Thi Hong told the court, "I understand, but I am not guilty," in English. The two face the death sentence if found guilty. Malaysian officials say the women attacked Kim Jong-nam using a powerful poison at the Kuala Lumpur airport. He died 20 minutes later. The officials say the poison was the deadly nerve agent VX. Kim is the half-brother of North Korean leader Kim Jong-un. Their father was former North Korean leader Kim Il-sung. Malaysia has blamed North Korea for organizing the killing and is seeking additional suspects in the case. On Tuesday, a North Korean delegation arrived in Kuala Lumpur seeking the body of the man. North Korea's official news agency has denounced the findings as the height of absurdity. It said the women could not have used such a poison without harming themselves and others. Malaysia continues to hold the body of the man, who North Korea identifies only as Kim Chol, the name on his passport. The killing in Malaysia has caused some lawmakers in the United States to consider further punishments for North Korea. Ted Yoho, a Republican representative from the state of Florida, says there is support for returning North Korea to the list of countries that support terrorism. Congress placed North Korea on the list after the bombing of a South Korean airplane in 1987, which killed 115 people. North Korea was removed from the list in 2008 as part of a deal to reduce its nuclear program. The State Department says the U.S. Secretary of State must find that the North has repeatedly provided support for acts of international terrorism to return it to the list. Currently, three nations, Iran, Sudan, and Syria are on the list. Experts disagree on whether the attack in Kuala Lumpur can be defined as an act of terrorism. Joshua Stanton is a lawyer who specializes in sanctions. He says the killing, along with North Korea's many other acts, means that North Korea should be returned to the list. However, Daniel Benjamin, a former U.S. State Department counterterrorism official, says the case is very unusual and lies in a gray zone. A State Department spokesperson told VOA that the department uses all available information and intelligence from a variety of sources on North Korea. The spokesperson added that even without being designated as a state sponsor of terrorism, North Korea remains among the most heavily sanctioned countries in the world.
The United States is increasing pressure on North Korea to cut back on its nuclear activities. The U.S. government also wants to build ties with allies and partners in East Asia to deal with the rising threat of a nuclear-armed North Korea. This week, the State Department released a statement on North Korea's nuclear and ballistic missile programs. It said the programs directly threaten the security of South Korea, Japan, and the United States. South Korean, Japanese, and U.S. officials met in Washington on Monday to discuss ways to restrict the money North Korea spends on weapons development. The three said they explored a joint way forward toward the complete, verifiable, and irreversible denuclearization of North Korea. Joseph Yun is the State Department's Special Representative for North Korea Policy. He led the meeting with Japanese and South Korean officials. The discussions followed an earlier foreign ministerial meeting in the German city of Bonn. They were at least partly a reaction to North Korea's latest ballistic missile launch on February 12th. The State Department noted, the officials considered other possible measures under national authorities, including means to restrict further the revenue sources for North Korea's weapons programs, particularly illicit activities. Stephen Norper is a professor at Columbia University and serves as a director of the Korea Society. He says human rights and financial measures are two issues that have had the greatest effect on North Korea. In the past, U.S. officials have threatened to send reports of human rights abuses by the government of Kim Jong-un to the International Criminal Court. The U.S. government also has taken steps to restrict the finances of North Korean individuals and groups. Anthony Ruggiero is with the Foundation for Defense of Democracies, a research center in Washington. He told VOA that the U.S., Japan, and South Korea should decide on new action against North Korea. He said the three should target North Korea's provocative activities. Ruggiero also said cooperation with China was important. Beijing should at least be part of the focus of renewed North Korea sanctions, he said. Stephen Norper, however, notes that some Chinese officials have blamed U.S. actions for recent efforts by North Korea to expand its missile program. U.S. Secretary of State Rex Tillerson spoke with Chinese State Counselor Yang Jiechi on Tuesday. The two discussed what they called the mutually beneficial economic relationship between the U.S. and China. But they also noted concerns about North Korean nuclear activities. On Monday, Yang spoke briefly with U.S. President Donald Trump after he met with Trump's National Security Advisor, H.R. McMaster. Yang also met with Trump's advisor and son-in-law, Jared Kushner. The United States, China, Japan, and South Korea are all members of what diplomats call the six-party talks. The two other members are North Korea and Russia. The six-party talks have been held at different times since 2003. The goal was to expand economic aid, security guarantees, and diplomatic ties with North Korea in exchange for the North suspending its nuclear weapons program. However, all six countries have not held talks since North Korea tested a nuclear device in 2009. That was one of five nuclear tests the country has carried out. Some former U.S. officials say it is time to deal with North Korea in a different way. They say direct engagement with the North could help develop ways to avoid a possible conflict that is in no one's interest. I'm Mario Ritter.
Been listening to Learning English, a 30-minute program from the Voice of America. For more news stories and information, go to our website, learningenglish.voanews.com. Up next, Marcia James will bring us this week's People in America report.
Ripken loves literature. The man from Frankfurt, Germany, reads books by writers all over the world. And he learned years ago that not all nations permit writers to express themselves freely. In fact, free expression can be quite dangerous in many places. so Ripken decided to act. He helped establish an organization to protect writers. The International Cities of Refuge Network, ICORN, was born in 1993. Its founders sought to persuade cities, not central government, to give refuge to persecuted writers.
I got involved in a program where persecuted writers are being given refuge in cities in Germany, and Frankfurt was one of the first cities, and I was involved right from the beginning, from the mid-90s, to set up this program. The first organization was called International Parliament of Writers. In 2006, then we came together and established ICORN, International Cities of Refuge Network.
It was not his original plan. He had a different view of his future as a young man.
When I was 15, I was thinking, because of my reading obsession, to become a bookseller. When I was 15, sort of graduating from primary school, and then my mother said, you do your high school diploma first, and then you can still become a bookseller, and so on. So she influenced me on that.
A bookseller he did not become. Instead, in the late 1960s, Peter Ripken began a five-year stint as a manager in an aid organization working in Africa. But his affinity for the written word remained strong. And then he got a call.
Then I was being asked, can you help us? Somebody has defected at our radio station. So I worked for 3 years at that radio station, Voice of Germany. That is the equivalent to Voice of America. I worked as a deputy editor for the Africa section. And I liked it, but when somebody else came and said, we have this organization promoting African, Asian, Latin American literature, and we need somebody with your background to follow a person who has left us. Can you do it? Do you want to do it?
Ripken did not hesitate.
I said yes. I thought maybe I'd do that 5 years, but I did it for 20 because it was so interesting, meeting authors, traveling to literary conferences, yeah, doing workshops with publishers and authors. That was so varied, so interesting, and that I did it for 20 years.
Peter Ripken grew up reading German authors, but his interests broadened to other European and American literature. Then he found what he calls books outside of the norm. This helped grow his interest in political developments in other regions.
I read mostly novels. I started early reading African, Arab, Indian authors, Latin American authors. That was one thing. And going with it, I had a strong interest in political developments in other continents. I'm especially interested in political developments in Africa and the Arab world. And I've made efforts to find out by traveling, by meeting people, by going to conferences. And these two elements have shaped my life.
Peter Ripken has written one book himself. At the height of the anti-apartheid struggle, he wrote a handbook on Southern Africa. But poetry came along later for Ripken, and with a little pressure.
I remember a Moroccan poet at one time told me, you Europeans, you are doing everything to kill poetry. And I wanted to prove to him that that I was not killing poetry. So I read poetry and I edited anthologies.
Last year, Peter Ripkin retired after several years as ICORN's chairman. But he is still active in the organization. He and many others are developing relationships with new partners and supporters. The goal is to increase the group's capacity to protect and promote writers and artists at risk around the world. More than 60 cities have joined the network, and no less than 170 writers and artists have found shelter in an ICORN member city. In 2016, International Cities of Refuge Network celebrated its 10-year anniversary. And Ripkin says he will continue to stay busy in the world of arts and literature.
There's one project. We are setting up a cultural center in southern Spain for encounters between writers and artists from Algeria, Tunisia, Morocco, Spain, France, and Germany. I'm involved there. I'm involved in an information center in southern Africa. I am preparing with a friend a handbook of African literature, and corresponding with people, and partly, I must say, also traveling.
Peter Ripkin hopes to be remembered as somebody who promoted creativity and supported literature as a political tool and source of enjoyment.
At one time, I was over political. For example, I read literature at a time as literature with a branded fist, as a political weapon. I looked at the content, and it was only later that I discovered that literature in itself is pleasure. Reading can move you, enlighten you, and to convey to others this notion, that I think is what I believe is my main motivation, what makes me tick.
I'm Marcia James.
If you have an Android phone, you should know about two new updates to Android that Google announced this past week. The updates add new features to Android phones to make them more useful. Google Assistant is Google's digital assistant that carries out voice commands, similar to Apple's Siri and Amazon's Alexa. Since Google Assistant was launched in October, the service has only been available on Google's Pixel and Pixel XL phones, Google Home Smart Speaker, Android Wear smartwatches, and Allo messaging app. Earlier this week, Google announced that many more phones will be getting Google Assistant. The update, including Google Assistant, will be available to phones running Android 6.0 or Marshmallow and 7.0 or Nougat, as well as phones made by companies HTC, Huawei, LG, Samsung, and Sony. Google said the update would arrive this week for English speakers in the US, United Kingdom, Canada, and Australia. German speakers in Germany should also get the update this week. Additional languages will be added during 2017. To receive the update, make sure you have an eligible phone and have downloaded the Google Play Services app onto the phone. After the update, you can press the Home button or say, OK, Google, to begin using Google Assistant. Then start asking questions such as, what is the weather forecast? And Google Assistant will answer based on where you are. In its announcement, Google said, our goal is to make the assistant available anywhere you need it. In January, the company announced plans to bring Google Assistant to televisions and cars later this year.
Google also announced a major update to one of its messaging apps. With this update, the app changes its name from Android Messenger to Android Messages. Android Messages will become the default text messaging app for Android phones. This app will be pre-installed on Android phones from manufacturers LG, Motorola, Sony, and others. Android Messages will also come pre-installed with Google's Pixel and Pixel XL phones. Users of other phones can download the Android Messages app from the Google Play Store. Android Messages is one of three messaging apps from Google. The others are Allo and Google Hangouts. A future update to the Android Messages app will make text messages more powerful by changing from SMS, meaning short messaging services, to RCS, or rich communications services. When updated to RCS, Android Messages will offer features such as receipts that show when a message has been read, stickers, maps, and more. RCS messages on Android Messages will be available on phones from partner cell phone service providers. Google's announcement said that these partners include Sprint, Rogers, Telenor, Orange, Deutsche Telekom, Vodafone, and Globe. These features will only be available for messages sent and received within the Android Messages app. Those who do not use the app, such as iPhone owners, will not share in those features. iPhone owners do have these features in iMessage, however.
Google is working with companies to add helpful interactive features to their RCS text messages. In the announcement, Google gave the example of an airline that could send a passenger a text to provide a full check-in experience, complete with boarding pass, visual flight updates, and terminal maps on demand. Initial partners for RCS Android Messages include companies Virgin Trains, Walgreens, Amber Alert Europe, Baskin-Robbins, BlaBlaCar, and FICO. GameStop, Philips, Subway, Time Inc., and Uber are among the others.
Google did not announce a date when RCS on Android Messages will be available. The name of the app already has been changed to Android Messages in the Google Play Store. We also do not know how users will be able to learn whether the person they are sending a text to has the RCS version of the Android Messages app. For example, in iMessage for iPhone, the text bubbles are blue for those who use iMessage and green for those who do not use it.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.